You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA, news and commentary.
July 28, 2020, Attorney General Barr in front of the House Democrats, House Judiciary Committee, and he's telling them what they don't want to hear. He's accusing the House Democrats of attempting to cover up abuses of power in the government's investigation of the so-called Russian collusion, and also calling out Democrats for not standing up and protesting the rioting that's taking place across our nation. Good for him. I knew they were not going to like having him in front of them. And Texas Republican Senator Ted Cruz also speaking out and saying, Democrat politicians should be held accountable for, quote, letting their cities burn. If you were a mayor of Portland or Oakland, or any other city, Seattle, where they've had all this violence, can you really stand there in front of your citizenry and say, I'm doing everything I can to help you, when you call back police, won't let police do their job, and even join the call to defund or even abolish police? In the meantime, from Atlanta comes a report that the protesters who were attacking the Atlanta field office of U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement were using some modified fireworks. By modified, as these 100 to 200 dressed in dark clothing, backpacks, goggles, and helmets approached, also carrying shields, bats, large sticks, they were throwing explosives, and some cases the explosives did not go off and were taken from some of the protesters, and these were commercial-grade fireworks, but now repackaged to include nails. Not just to set a fire, but to cause death and injury. 61 nights since the death of George Floyd, with clashes again last night in Portland, Oregon, also in Tempe, Arizona, others in Austin, Texas overnight. Is any of this doing any good for the George Floyd case and his story? It's been lost, hasn't it? And of course, the Portland mayor had insisted, I'm not going to have federal agents in my city. Well, they are there, and they're protecting the courthouse because police were not available to protect it. They were busy elsewhere. Now the mayor, even though he said he's pledging, I'm not going to meet with the Department of Homeland Security. He said, we're aware they are here. I wish they weren't. We hadn't invited them. But now says he will meet with them. He's got to back down because the protesters continue. Violence continues unabated. Take note of this. Politico is reporting. Gun ownership surging among black Americans. Stores across the country report a run on guns and ammunition, all since the beginning of the pandemic. The National African American Gun Owners Association president said, we're seeing as many as 2,000 new members a day because of the coronavirus warnings and the shutdown. And, of course, you've got the violence that's taking place. The Second Amendment applies to all Americans, regardless of your race, your color, your ethnicity, your gender. And that's perfectly all right. And the difference between these Americans, black or other minorities, is they're going through the proper channel to get a weapon. They're not among the gangs and thugs out there looking to steal and try to shoot somebody up for it. A well-armed citizenry is part of our protection in this nation. Senator Marco Rubio saying passing the next COVID-19 relief package will not be easy, but it will get there. The House under Pelosi came out with a $3 trillion package. Republicans coming out with a $1 trillion. And, of course, more studies claiming that hydroxychloroquine does not work when treating patients being labeled by doctors at the White Coat Summit yesterday as fake science. We're going to spend more time on that coming up later in this hour. And here's a story I know you were waiting to hear about, soon to be in a book near you. Former FBI agent Peter Smurf, stroke, releasing a book titled Compromise, Counterintelligence, and the Threat of Donald J. Trump. Former FBI agent Peter Stroke, of course, involved in the investigations of the Trump campaign ties to Russia, Hillary Clinton's email server, writing anti-Trump text messages to his lover, got fired for it, now is coming out with a book. It should be out 2 months before the election. Great timing.
Larry Connors, USA, news and commentary.
So are you ready to get out from the COVID-19 scare? We might still need to be careful in some areas. I do encourage businesses to make sure your facility is clear of COVID-19. And, of course, if you open up and then a client or an employee or someone else surfaces with COVID-19, you need to reevaluate what's going on. I would encourage you to contact Wellington Environmental. They can determine at a very reasonable cost what you need to do before you open, once you are open, and as you move forward. It just makes good sense, doesn't it? Wellington Environmental, for 30 years, has been treating situations at hospitals, schools, daycare centers, private homes. 314-644-4930. 644-4930. Wellington Environmental. Be well with Wellington Environmental. This segment of Larry Connors USA is brought to you by my friends at John Beal Roofing, covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest. Best quality, lowest prices. John Beal, 1-800-NEW-ROOF, 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
Love and happiness. Something going wrong. Someone's on the phone. 3 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. Talking about how she can make it right. Yeah.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
I think fundamentally what we're seeing is a hostage crisis. You have a lot of violent left-wing mobs, Antifa mobs, saying that if you don't give us power, if you don't give our political wing, the Democratic Party, power, we're going to keep terrorizing your cities. Now, why do I say that their political wing is the Democratic Party? Well, because I find it interesting that Democrats cannot for the life of them condemn Antifa and these violent mobs.
Again, the words of Texas Congressman Dan Crenshaw, saying these mobs are now holding U.S. hostage. And saying, will we continue to terrorize your cities until we get the power we want? And as he called out, the Democrats are their political wing. And the Democrats are doing nothing to condemn and call them out for the violence. No, they're going the opposite direction. Let me give you some quotes here. This was just over the weekend, and it continues pretty much on a daily basis. But Joe Biden, claiming that federal law enforcement officers were, quote, brutally attacking peaceful protesters. Has he not seen the video from Portland night after night for 60-plus nights now as they throw Molotov cocktails at federal agents trying to protect the courthouse? They only venture away from the courthouse to expand the perimeter for protection. And yes, then they go into the crowd sometimes if they can identify someone and grab them that they threw a explosive device or something else that harmed a federal agent, they're going to go arrest them. Should they just let them go? And even you've got House Judiciary Committee Chairman Jerry Nadler, Democrat in New York, over the weekend, claiming all this violence is a myth, a myth. I mentioned in news and commentary, that the Portland mayor, Ted Wheeler, of course, who's been very upset with federal agents being in his town protecting a federal building, claiming that they were inflaming the violence. They only went in after the mob began to attack a federal facility. And federal agents were sent in, specially trained SWAT and our riot control groups from ICE and Immigration and Border Customs Patrol to protect the facility. And, of course, the mayor said, "You guys, we didn't want you. You're here. We don't want you. You should leave." And insisted, "We're not going to talk to them." He said, "We haven't been invited to meet with them, and if we were, we would decline." Those words, July 16. And we've had continuous nights of these protests and fires and demonstrations since. And remember, the mayor himself went to one of the events trying to talk to the mob, and the mob shouted him down. They didn't want to hear what he had to say. They said he was already a sellout. They told him to get lost. They said, "You should resign." And then a tear gas canister landed nearby, and the mayor got kind of weepy because of the tear gas, which is understandable. But then he was kind of acting like, "Hey, I'm here with you. I'm suffering with you." And they were saying, "Yeah, right. Are you coming back tomorrow night?" And they kept trying to press into him, and his security guards were keeping the mob away. No word if they would have hurt him or tried to. But if he hadn't had his own security guard around him, they would have gotten to him. Maybe we should defund his security guard. But on July 16th, he says, "We're not going to meet with him if we're asked." You know what he's done since? Last night, the mayor tweeted that he and the Portland City Commissioner, Joanne Hardesty, the one who blamed all the violence on undercover officers getting in the midst of the mob, starting the violence, not real protesters, but undercover cops, then had to admit, "It's a lie, it's wrong, I need to apologize." The two of them are now calling, quote, for an immediate meeting with Department of Homeland Security leadership to discuss a ceasefire and removal of federal forces from Portland. You're talking to the wrong people to stop the ceasefire. It's the protesters, the mob. And again, Congressman Crenshaw, he said the Democrats just will not recognize what is happening right in front of them.
Whether it's sugarcoating the behavior as mostly peaceful, or Jerry Nadler saying Antifa's a myth. We remember Eric Swalwell said he's never heard of Antifa. Remember the governor of Washington refused to even acknowledge that Chaz existed at first? There's a pattern here. And here's another thing. You look at words from Nancy Pelosi. What does she say? She says, "You know, this is all Trump's fault. If we were in power, none of this left-wing terrorism would be happening right now." So their messaging is coming from different angles, but it is very well coordinated. And it's this. They're going to hold you hostage. They're going to hold you, the American people, hostage until you give them power.
Again, the words of Texas Congressman Crenshaw, Republican. And when you talk about the violence that's been going on, and for Nadler say it's all a myth, Biden saying that the federal agents are attacking peaceful protesters. I told you that just the other night, near one of the Portland protests, a bag was found, and inside the bag, rifle ammunition and Molotov cocktails. And I told you in news and commentary in the previous hour about protesters attacking the Atlanta field office of U.S. Immigration and Customs. We're using commercial-grade fireworks wrapped and packed with nails. They were wanting to not just cause a fire, but to maim, injure, and kill. And the Democrats still don't recognize it. I'll tell you one person who has recognized what's happening. That's the Seattle Police Chief, Carmen Best. Remember, she and her officers had to abandon a precinct headquarters when the Chaz Chop group began to take over a six-square block of Seattle. And she later said, "I did not want to leave that facility. I'd asked my officer to stand there and defend it, and then we had to leave, and I didn't want to give that order." And the mayor said, "Well, I didn't give the order either." In other words, somebody's lying. I would put my bet on the mayor. But the police chief said, "I was doing what I could at that time." And now the City Council of Seattle, the other day passed an ordinance. Here it is, City Council Ordinance 11905, Crowd Control Tool. Goes into effect July 26th. What are we? 2 days past this last weekend. That's when it went into effect. This ordinance bans Seattle police officers from using less lethal tools, including pepper spray, that is commonly used to disperse crowds that are turned violent. In other words, this gives police no ability to disperse a crowd, to intercede, to do anything. No pepper spray, certainly no rubber bullets, nothing. So here's the response of the Seattle police chief. She's advising city business owners and residents, local police, quote, will not risk their personal safety to protect property. Her letter states, dear business owner and our resident, please know the Seattle Police Department is committed to addressing life safety incidents and calls for service and responding to ongoing demonstrations and unrest in the city. But now this legislation has passed, officers have no ability to safely intercede to preserve property in the middle of a large, violent crowd. I've done my due diligence of informing the city council of the numerous times of how this would impact upcoming events. For this reason, Seattle police will have an adjusted deployment in response to any demonstrations. I will never ask our officers to risk their personal safety to protect property without the tools to do it in a safe way. That's good. So you can expect more property destruction, arson, looting, and attempts to injure police, according to the chief. She says, some have asked why our officers are not arresting those engaging in criminal behavior, as officers do every day, as they have in recent protests. If it is safe to do so, and even when it places their lives in danger, our officers always directly address criminal behavior. They do this, however, when they know they have the tools shown to allow safe use and their protection. Crenshaw again. Congressman Crenshaw, Texas, says the mobs continue to persist. They're running Seattle now. They are running Seattle through their arm at the Seattle City Council. They want to run the nation through their political arm, the Democrat Party. What does the mob want?
How do I know that they just want power? Because normally protesters have some kind of demand, right? There's something that would stop their protest, because, you know, maybe a policy change. But that never happens. Yeah. Even when Portland defunds their police, it doesn't stop the mob. They good continue point. Because it's power that they're after.
In other words, you can give in to them all the time. It is not going to be enough. And you want some examples of that? I talked about it before, but let me give you more of the more recent ones. The Seattle mayor, Jenny Durkin, and a couple of the council members. Now, remember, the Seattle mayor was all in favor of letting the mob take over 6 square blocks of her city, then later a 3 square block. And she did nothing to break them up or move them out, even though there were basically no police zones. Shootings took place one weekend. A teenager shot to death inside the Chaz Chop Zone. We still don't know who did it, how it happened. Police were not allowed inside. We don't know for sure if police and EMTs could have gotten to him, if they could have saved the boy's life. We don't know. And a shooting the following weekend, and she still did nothing. You know when the Seattle mayor moved to start breaking them down and move them out? When they showed up protesting at her house. So that's happened again now. Mobs showing up and putting graffiti on her house and homes of two of the council members. One of them at her home read, "Guillotine Jenny." In other words, put her to the guillotine, chop her head off. Another, "Resign, B-I-H," you know that word. Windows at one of the council members' house read, "F you and don't be racist trash." Now, this council member has called for police to be defunded by 50% and even spoke with demonstrators outside her home. But it's not enough. 50% is not full defunding. It's not getting rid of police. At the home of one of the other council members, protesters used a bullhorn, spray-painted corporate bootlicker on the street in front of the house. Leaders of several local Native American organizations were upset with the offensive messages directed at elected leaders, particularly those targeting one of the council members because he's a member of the Blackfeet Nation tribe. And they're saying that council member should have a right as elected official to do her job without verbal harassment and vandalism at her home. Now, the Native American organization spoke up only because it involved a council member who's a member of one of their tribes. See, when it comes into your own backyard, then suddenly, oh yeah, we want it stopped. We want to put an end to it. The mayor of Oakland finally came out and started criticizing Black Lives Matter demonstrations. Her home was vandalized by BLM activists last week, even though she supported them. She's not in favor of fully defunding the police, but said we could look at it. That's not enough. The mob wants everything. And then when she dared criticize Black Lives Matter, then they really went after her. And you know what she and other Democrats are saying? All of this is going to help reelect Trump. What you're doing is going to help Trump get reelected. As I've been saying, I think this violence on the streets, even more so than COVID, is going to play in the hands of the voters when they go to the polls. Speaking about COVID, though, what about that doctor's white coat summit? Fake news? Stand by.
Is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
I have seen 350 patients and counting. Put them on hydroxychloroquine. They all got better. This is what I would say to all those studies. They had high doses. They were giving the wrong patients. I would call them fake science. Any study that says hydroxychloroquine doesn't work is fake science. And I want them to show me how it doesn't work. How is it going to work for 350 patients for me and they are all alive and then somebody say it doesn't work? Guys, all them studies, fake science.
Those are the words of Dr. Stella Emanuel with the Rehoboth Medical Center in Houston. She appeared with other doctors yesterday at the so-called White Coat Summit that was put together by a Tea Party organization. And, of course, the left ignored it and said, your whole news conference is a fake news conference. And, of course, one of the issues that they were pointing out, the doctors, that COVID-19 could well be treated in many cases with hydroxychloroquine. We're going to have a professor of epidemiology in the next segment dealing with that because he also published a report on that very issue last week. And I want to get into some details with him. And he says he did talk to some of these doctors appearing at this White Coat Summit, which the mainstream media wanted to ignore and say it didn't exist. Listen how MSNBC portrayed the event.
The president, in terms of handling the pandemic yesterday, again, spreading disinformation about coronavirus. Last night, he retweeted a video of a group of people in white lab coats calling themselves frontline doctors, spreading false claims during what appears to be a fake news conference. This amplified by the president of the United States. One of the speakers identified herself as a doctor, promoted the drug hydroxychloroquine as a, quote, cure, while also claiming, quote, you don't need a mask. Twitter since has removed the video, but not before it went viral. The FDA revoked the drug's emergency use authorization last month, saying the potential benefits are not worth the risk. The president has promoted the unproven drug aggressively and even claimed to have used it himself.
Well, he's right on some of that. The president has claimed that he's been using it. And yes, the FDA had given approval for it and then revoked its emergency use authorization, stating it is found not to be effective in sick hospital patients. But then went on to say, Doctors, however, can use it outpatient where early treatment is key to its effectiveness. In other words, it does have some benefits. Now, these doctors appearing in this white coat summit the other day, yesterday, were saying it has value, it's helped, it's worked. But again, you got the mainstream media ignoring it, and Twitter even taking down the account, striking out its viral capability because it got so many viewers right away, and even Twitter censored Donald Trump Jr.'s Twitter account because he started tweeting some remarks about it. But they didn't do anything about the fake remarks from Rosemary, fake comedian, saying that Donald Trump is responsible for thousands of deaths. That's fake also, for sure. But Twitter didn't do that because they give her a pass. All right, we'll take a break when we come back. As I said, my next guest, I told him in advance that I also want to discuss his take on these doctors, the White Coat Summit, which took place. And he said he's had some contact with a couple of them already. This doctor is a professor of epidemiology at the Yale School of Public Health. What does he have to say about the value of hydroxychloroquine? Stand by, please.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
My next guest had a piece published in Newsweek last week, and I want to read a statement from it. I'm fighting for a treatment that the data fully support, but which, for reasons having nothing to do with the correct understanding of the science, has been pushed to the sidelines. Words of Dr. Harvey Risch, professor of epidemiology, Yale School of Public Health. Glad to have you on board, sir.
My pleasure to talk to you.
I want to get into the details of your report, but before we do it, this event hosted yesterday, the group founded by Dr. Simone Gold, a board-certified physician and attorney, the organization America's Frontline Doctors coming out and making their statements, and most every one of them was talking about the values of hydroxychloroquine. Did you say you've had direct contact with either them or some members of that group? And you tell me what you know about them and so forth.
I'm not affiliated with them, but we have very parallel kinds of ideas and support the same thing, that hydroxychloroquine should be available for patients to use to treat them or to protect them from COVID disease.
Have you talked to any of those doctors appearing yesterday in this streaming video? They got something like 17, 18 million watching.
I've spoken to or emailed with one or two of them in the past.
Right. Now, this is a difficult question, Doc, Professor, but I assume you would not call either one of them quacks.
None of them are quacks.
All right. But if I'm watching the mainstream media, they say this is a bunch of fake doctors, a fake news conference, and that they are the ones politicizing hydroxychloroquine.
Well, it's easy to throw labels around without data, you know. I mean, you can Google any one of them. Google Dr. Stella Emanuel. You'll come up with her medical practice.
Well, one of the things they apparently were trying to quickly point out, that she's only been a doctor since November. I haven't had a chance to check that. I don't know if that's a fact or not, but that doesn't make any difference if she had a degree issued in November compared to now. Not to me, anyway, if she's fully authorized. But let's get to your report, because one of the things, and the quote I read from your report, you were speaking specifically about the fact that you're, as you said, you're flummoxed to find that in the midst of this crisis, you're fighting for a treatment that could be used but pushed to the sidelines. You are talking about hydroxychloroquine. Go ahead, sir.
So that is correct. Hydroxychloroquine has a degree of efficacy in the right context. The context is to use for people at the very beginning of the illness, what we call outpatients, before they're hospitalized, and that have to be at high risk. So That means that people under age 60 who have no chronic conditions, are not obese, don't have diabetes, and so on, generally get through this illness very well on their own with just a little bit of symptom management or fever or pain or something like that. But if, in rare cases, those people can develop shortness of breath, at which point they become high risk. And people over 60 or who have diabetes or obesity or other chronic diseases, they are at high risk too, and those are the people who need to be treated. And what we've seen is for that class of patient, hydroxychloroquine in combination with zinc and azithromycin, doxycycline, some other antibiotics, a few other medications, but basically that's the class of treatment that works very well for those people. It doesn't work later in the illness. It doesn't work very well in hospital patients. And so you can't take data from hospital studies and extrapolate to outpatients because it doesn't apply at all in the first place.
Now, is that what you think has been going on lately as to why the FDA had apparently given approval for it? But then let me get the exact quote. You probably know it better than I do, but they ended up withdrawing support and saying it still could be used on an outpatient. Oh, here it is. The FDA revoked its emergency use authorization, restricting the use of hydroxychloroquine in hospital setting only. It was not found to be effective in sick hospital patients. You agree with that part or that statement for the most part, correct?
I think it's largely true. That one's an arguable one because there's evidence in both directions. The Henry Ford study and the Mount Sinai study do show benefit, but there are other studies that don't. Fair enough. I think the FDA was being a bit disingenuous about that because while on the one hand they're saying we're not prohibiting it, but in a later or other statement, they said that we think doctors should not be using hydroxychloroquine plus azithromycin. And 44 of the state's medical licensing boards and pharmacy boards then have made limitations on doctors using it. And I know of now half a dozen doctors who are being investigated by their medical licensing boards for saving the lives of hundreds of their patients.
For saving the lives of their patients because they use hydroxychloroquine? They're being
That's
investigated?
Correct.
They're
That's
being
right.
hauled up in front of their medical board.
That's right.
That to me, that says everything about how this has gotten politicized. The life of the patient be damned.
Right.
Yeah, you're basing all of this on your own studies, but also other concurrent studies, correct?
My study is a review of everything that I could possibly find anywhere on the topic of outpatient treatment. That was done in April and May of this year when I published the first article in the American Journal of Epidemiology. Subsequent to that, I received three letters in response, which in responding to, I updated that in the same journal that there's now a number of additional studies. And in fact, there's even another study that I only tangentially reported on that was done in Brazil that we're still trying to get published. It's been submitted. And all of these studies, when you look at just outpatients at high risk, when they're treated, every one of them shows benefit of hydroxychloroquine. Now, the problem is that there's a lot of interference in this because then you have outpatients at low risk who've been treated. These are studies from the University of Minnesota. They're low-risk patients, and we know they're low-risk because the people on the placebo arms weren't hospitalized hardly at all. So there's no room to do better because the placebo people weren't getting hospitalized. So that shows that they're low-risk, and you can't evaluate a treatment in high-risk people when you're looking in low-risk people. Again, it's a bad extrapolation.
It's a difficult situation, I would think, for the medical community in trying to establish what's good and proper medicine and could be of value when whatever it is posted against a political posturing of any politician, in this particular case, President Trump and the Resist Trump movement, because he talked about it and the value that it could have, and it suddenly is blasted as denounced and not good at all, when you're clearly saying it has value in certain cases.
Yes, and in fact, it's not just certain cases. It's the most important case, because those are the patients who come to maybe 20 or 25% of patients are high-risk patients that first come to a doctor's office and need to get treated. So that's your first line of preventing them from being hospitalized and preventing them from dying. And so those are precisely the ones that have to be treated.
In fact, the FDA did say that doctors can still use it outpatient where early treatment is key to its effectiveness, off-label to treat COVID-19. So they're even acknowledging, yeah, and just in the cases you described, it might well be valuable.
But unfortunately, that was interpreted by 44 of the states in exactly the opposite direction.
Yeah, and I won't even get into the political breakdown of those states as to who's in control of each of those states. But the bottom line is, it seems to me like every year, before COVID-19 showed, flu vaccines were offered every year. Some people would get them, some wouldn't. Some people would get the vaccine, not have the flu. Some wouldn't get the vaccine, they wouldn't have the flu. Some would get the vaccine, and they'd get sicker, and then they were sick with the flu. To that extent, is it any different than anything else that comes down the pike that we believe overall its effectiveness and value, and yet there are cases where it does not do what was expected or intended?
Correct. Nothing is perfect. But, you know, a typical year for the influenza, I believe, will have 50,000 deaths. And we accept that as normal. And who, for all we know, hydroxychloroquine may work against influenza as well. It's untested. So there's still a possibility for that.
We're 130,000 deaths now classified as COVID-19. We don't know if they died of COVID or had COVID when they died, maybe in a car wreck. I mean, the way they've been classifications and so forth are very unclear. But you still, in your view, have no doubt that hydroxychloroquine could save thousands, tens of thousands of lives?
So there are, I know, six or seven physicians around the country who are actively treating their high-risk patients. They're treating more than some of them, but they're actively treating high-risk patients. They have amazing successes, zero deaths, or virtually zero deaths. A doctor in Muncie, New York, who started this, Dr. Vladimir Zelenko, who said, I've treated 405 patients and had two deaths, and this works. Okay, let's say you think that's a fluke. So then he says, all right, well, now I'm going to prospectively treat another 400 patients, and you tell me whether it's a fluke. And that's what he did. He treated another 400 patients after we already knew that he said he could do this, and there were no deaths. So you can't tell him that the 400 patients that he treated that were all high-risk patients that he treated successfully don't exist. They were the ones that he treated that worked. And then there's another five doctors around the country with the same kinds of stories, that they've treated patients. And it's not just that they were selected to be the ones who it worked. They treated them, and then they said, okay, I've treated this, I'll treat more. And then when they treat more, exactly the same thing happens, no doubt.
All right. Professor, I want to thank you for your time. I found your article fascinating, and we couldn't get you on last week. I'm glad we could do it today, and we'll be reaching out to you in the future as time goes on, sir.
Thank you very much. Great to talk to you.
You bet. Thank you. Dr. Harvey Risch, professor of epidemiology, Yale School of Public Health, says hydroxychloroquine in many cases can be of value. But, of course, to the mainstream media, if it's stated that way, then you have tied to Trump, and it's fake news. Take a breakaway, come back. I don't know where professional sports is going right now, but it's not looking good. Please stand by.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook. Is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
Sports and politics. For many, long before all of this happened, they went to a sporting event to get away from politics and the rest of the ills and pressures of the world. They went there for the sport itself, to enjoy a game, to root for or against a team, for or against a player, not based on any race, not based on any religion, not based on anything but love of the sport. And that player, or lack of love for that particular player. But where we are now, professional sports has been basically extorted into reacting. I'm telling you, it's been extorting. When you get the situation with the Washington Redskins, that they are made clear that if you don't change your name, if you don't drop the name Redskins, then you will not be able to move into that new stadium. And a major sponsor for that stadium will withdraw its money from you. That's extortion. Make no mistake about it. So now they're going to be known as just the Washington football team. We'll come back to the issue of football in a moment. But we're already seeing it with the NBA has said it's going to paint on all the courts for opening this season Black Lives Matter. You have players who are being given permission to put jerseys, wear jerseys on the back of their jerseys to carry a social message of their choice. One of the major NBA players, LeBron James, said, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to wear my name. That's who I endorse, and that's my character and what I represent. I don't see anybody calling him out and mocking him. I've heard no one accuse LeBron James of not believing that black lives are important. Of course they are. They're important to him. He's a black man. But no one dare say anything about him. And when baseball began to open up the other day, there was a concern, and I heard from various people, if I see them do anything reference Black Lives Matter, I'm done. I'm done with baseball. Well, here's what they did the other day. On the opening day between Washington and the Yankees, the Nationals and the Yankees, in a pregame ceremony, pregame, pre-advance national anthem, the teams came out, stood, kneeled, and were all holding a black cloth that they stretched between them of some type. Then they had the national anthem, and all of the players stood at that point during the national anthem. Well, that made some folks say, okay, I can live with that. But then they see BLM stenciled on the pitcher's mound, so it's there every time you've got a TV shot of the pitcher's mound. In Los Angeles, the teams are going to do the same thing on their opening night, Dodgers and Giants. Prior to the national anthem on opening night, every player and coach from both the Dodgers and Giants holding a long piece of black fabric to show support for Black Lives Matter, or Black Lives General. Let me put it that way. You interpret the way you want to, obviously. And then they all took a knee. Oh, wait a minute, not so fast. They didn't all take a knee. Giants reliever Sam Coonrod did not. He said he remained standing. He said, I meant no ill will by it. I don't think I'm better than anybody. I'm just a Christian. I believe I can't kneel before anything but God, Jesus Christ. I chose not to kneel. I feel if I did kneel, I would be a hypocrite. I don't want to be a hypocrite. And he added, I'm a Christian. I cannot get on board on a couple of things I've read about Black Lives Matter, how they lean toward Marxism, and said some negative things about the nuclear family. If you look at the Black Lives Matter Facebook, their postings, you'll see what he's talking about. And again, the founders of Black Lives Matter have admitted we're Marxist trained. If there was ever going to be a good intent, a really true, honest, sincere intent with BLM, it's been hijacked. But I gave them the benefit of the doubt in the beginning, saying I understand and I can accept what they're trying to do, but it became in your face, you've got to accept it this way or no way. And then the violence started, the rioting. So it either got hijacked or it was always going on there, and they were using good PR, knowing that who can speak about that, who can speak out against it. That's why you got the Moms Against Violence showing up in Portland. Who can speak out against moms? But when you hear them shout for federal agents to go home, they're not there to bring a ceasefire and try to stop the protesters. They come with an agenda. Football season coming up. That takes us right back to the original kneeling. Pittsburgh Steelers defensive end Stephon Tuitt said yesterday, I'm not kneeling for the flag, and screw anybody that has a problem with that. My grandmother was an immigrant from the Caribbean and worked her ass off to bring 20 people over the right way. She had no money, educated herself to be a nurse. She's living good now. 6 games last year, he had 22 tackles, 3.5 sacks, missed the final 10 games, had a torn muscle. Now, in the offseason earlier, his teammate had said the team would protest in unity, however they choose to do it. But as some of his teammates now have different feelings about kneeling after his remarks, we're going to see how it plays out with the Steelers with the national anthem this coming season. Again, here's someone else saying, I'm not going to do that. It's against what I want to do and what I say. But the mob will not let you have your way. It has to be their way. Back tomorrow. Book it.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Thank you for listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.